Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Welcome to Wall Street Unspun, hosted by Peter Schiff.
Tell him to put the
substituting for Peter this week. My name is Neeraj Chaudhary. I am an investment consultant with Euro Pacific Capital, and I wanted to come and join you today in Peter's stead. Peter is hosting another meeting this evening, and he has asked me to come join us for the show this week. What an exciting week! This is we are definitely at a crossroads in history. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind. And, you know, probably the biggest and most important visit by a U.S. president to China since Nixon took place this week, as President Obama went to the APEC conference hosted in Asia, and also visited the president of China in China. This is his maiden voyage to China, as the AP called it. And I'll tell you, this is a very, very historic moment for our country, because unfortunately, it's a bad historic moment, because effectively, President Obama went to Asia with his hat in his hand. He basically talked about the need for the Chinese to revalue their currency higher, and he was spurned on that point. The president of China, in their joint statement highlighting economic recovery, refused to say that the Chinese currency will be going higher. Of course, that's a joke. We all know that that's something that cannot and will not continue, the peg, I mean, between the yuan and the dollar. But the point is not so much what the Chinese currency is valued at today or the fact that it will go up in the future, but the fact that we're no longer calling the shots. It was Obama that went to China, and it was the Chinese setting the agenda for the meeting, and it was the Chinese setting the tone for the meeting, and it was the Chinese issuing their version of the joint statement that the president signed off on. This is an extraordinary situation that has developed, where you have effectively the leader of the free world. We are now beholden to what our largest creditor, the Chinese, the People's Bank of China, the Chinese government, we are beholden to what they want. It reminds me of the Suez Crisis in the mid-1950s, when Great Britain, that was the last vestiges of Great British, the British Empire, when Great Britain wanted to go into the Suez Canal, and President Eisenhower effectively told leadership of Great Britain that if they went into the Suez Canal and tried to secure it, that we would sell off all of our sterling-based holdings. Well, that day has come to America. Unfortunately, the Chinese are now calling the shots. They are effectively our bankers. They are our creditors. And we are unfortunately going to be living by their terms, not just now, but in the future. Exciting, but in a negative way for people who are not protecting themselves and who are not investing overseas. Co-hosting the show today is my branch manager, a longtime friend of Peter Schiff's. And for those of you who have listened to the show over the past years, he has also hosted the show many times. His name is Hemanth Kathuria. Hemanth, thank you for joining us as well.
How are you doing today, Neeraj?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Good. Just been really, really hectic. Just for the listeners out there, both Neeraj and I were in Las Vegas this weekend, and Peter had come out there to speak for a conference. The response that he's getting has been growing. Crashproof 2.0 is out As you know, he's running for Senate. If you want information on the campaign or the different money bombs that he's run recently, I encourage you to go to shiftforsenate.com. The timing is difficult just because of all the different places he's being pulled. He's doing a lot of town hall meetings, and it's going to possibly, he's trying to possibly be here for the second half of the show, so I can't promise anything, but if we can get Peter even for a few minutes, we'll definitely bring him into the show. Personally, it's been very busy for our branch also, as has been for all the branches. I'll be speaking at the End of Fed rally on November 22nd. What we're going to be doing, actually, is a follow-up to the previous rallies we've been doing. This is the third such event I've spoken at. Peter has spoken at a number of the End of Fed rallies himself. That movement is growing. The initiative to audit the Fed has now morphed into, from H.R. 1207, it's now known as S-604. It's in the Senate. The 30 co-sponsors in the Senate. It's growing there, too. I believe that it's inevitable that we will collectively speak up and demand to have more input into what's going on at that level. I mean, we have the AIG takeover and the money which effectively was transferred from the taxpayers into the pockets of Goldman Sachs. You know, people understand on one level that this is happening out there, but they want the details because it's it seems to be just the same old story. I mean, transfer of wealth from the taxpayers and the citizens into the pockets of the elite. So we need to continue these things. There will be rallies in New York, D.C., Boston, Philly, Atlanta, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, many more cities. Just Google End the Fed and you'll be able to get some details on that. I mean, these type of rallies, including like the Tea Parties, et cetera, it's very mainstream at this point. The you know, the media will try to paint this as a fringe movement, but just the fact that Peter can now have his voice heard running for Senate, the fact that that's possible and the fact that he's getting this tremendous response tells you that there are a lot of people who are fed up of the status quo and they want to see fresh ideas coming in. And so this is just more and more of evidence that the movement is growing. And I want to let Neeraj take their lead on this show. I just wanted to touch base briefly and talk about that. But a couple other things, and then I'll let Neeraj kind of start taking some calls. I wanted to talk about the last show that I was on, at least. Brad Cook had co-hosted the show with me. For those of you who don't know, Brad Cook is the CEO of Endeavor Silver. We talked a lot about the gold and silver markets and about Endeavor in particular. So for those viewers who are listening to that show and went in and bought the stock, congratulations, you've done very well. I did talk to Brad recently, and he continues to believe that this is just an expression from the markets that the central bankers around the world, led by our own Federal Reserve, are just ramping up the printing presses, and this is filtering into gold and silver. The liquidity boom that we're seeing is really going to continue. The evidence is not only in gold and silver, but in all asset classes. It's just being more pronounced in the metals because they are the only real form of money that has ever existed for the past 5,000 years. So that is something that we will continue to monitor. We have a whole list of elite gold and silver stocks that our analysts follow. If you don't have an account with Euro Pacific Capital, I encourage you to call either the toll-free line or call one of the offices that are still open. Right now it's about a little bit after 5 p.m. on the West Coast, so there are brokers standing by. And other than that, Neeraj, why don't you go ahead and take the lead, and what else we got to cover for today?
Well, you know, the big news again has been Obama stripping Asia, as you probably heard me discuss at the opening of the show. And a lot of the clients that I've been speaking with over the past couple of days are really starting to realize that this is a big, big trip. And as you mentioned, in Las Vegas, there were several hundred people that had come to that private event to hear Peter speak. And these are people who had not necessarily heard the message. And afterwards, Peter swarmed. He had a book signing. He was swarmed at the event afterwards with people asking questions. These are people who had not necessarily heard the message before. Peter was invited by the leader of that particular group to speak to them, and this is a pretty serious situation that we're in. And going forward, I think we're going to see Peter's message resonate more and more at a political level. Obviously, Peter is looking at the opportunity to serve in the United States Senate. He is now raised, according to his shiftforsenate.com website, the campaign has now raised about $1.2 million. That is an enormous sum of money. He's got several thousand followers to his website. So this is, you were saying earlier that the media is going to try to paint this as a fringe movement. I would say that the fringe has gone mainstream. And people are really looking around. Goldman Sachs, you mentioned the other day, I think, in fact, it might have just been this morning, announced that they were giving away $500 million to small businesses. And our folks internally here were quick to point out that that only represents 3% of their bonus pool of about $15 billion that they've effectively been handed by the U.S. taxpayer through the auspices of the Federal Reserve. They're going to give 3% that 3% of that money back to small businesses, which is just an absurdity when you think about the fact that that money has just been really placed in their pockets by the U.S. Federal Reserve. So it's the entire situation that we're in is a travesty, and the End the Fed rally is really an opportunity for people to express their frustrations. Thousands of people nationwide have been attending these rallies. They've been taking place once every couple of months or so, and it'll be great to see you. Just for those of you who don't know, at the End the Fed rally in Los Angeles, Hayman will be speaking. The event takes place from 11 to 12:30 at the Federal Reserve offices in downtown Los Angeles. Again, you can Google End the Fed and find out the exact details. But Hayman, it'll be a pleasure to hear you speak again on Sunday.
One of the things that just comes to mind now that you mentioned the Goldman Sachs thing from this morning, actually, is every Friday. I don't know if you guys do this. I mean, I'm talking about when I say you guys, I mean the listeners, but I do it. I wait till after the market closes on Friday, and I want to see what banks were taken over. And I've seen this pretty much every week.
Are you looking at who's taking over what firm, Haymond?
Yeah, you know what? I had the music cut in there for a second. I thought we might be having technical difficulties. I mean,
No, please go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. But what I was saying is the bank failures that have been coming are a lot of banks that have received TARP money. Now,
yes,
the whole objective of the TARP was to take the banks that were okay, they were fairly healthy. It was just an extraneous event which had temporarily put the kibosh on their liquidity. I mean, it was just the markets freezing up, and so the TARP was to help these guys out. Well, now you see these banks coming in and failing. They've taken the money. As you know, there's been a tremendous rally in corporate bonds. There's lots of money floating around, and yet these banks are failing. So what does that say about how the TARP has been managed? I mean, this is something that I think we're going to be looking at as case studies generations from now. This will probably be what students look at in their textbooks. And we're seeing in real time. Is this just part of the mismanagement that we've done by literally pouring gasoline on a fire? You've got the people who got us into this mess, been handed the responsibilities to somehow, some way, create a solution. And I don't see that happening, and I don't think the average person sees it happening, and that's why these other rallies and the Schiff for Senate campaign and Rand Paul running for Senate and the different kind of things that are happening out there are gaining momentum. And so, anyway, if callers have questions about this stuff, you know, definitely call in, and we're going to be taking calls.
Let me provide the 800 number. It's actually 1-888-678-9597. That is the number to call in on the show, and we actually have several callers that have been patiently waiting to join us. And I'm always thrilled when I host the show to see international callers. To me, that's what this is all about, is recognizing that internationally there are some very, very exciting things going on, things that that we deal with every day in our business. But there are also people out there who are very excited about what's taking place, and I'm always thrilled to take an international call. Ron in Malaysia is our first caller, and I'd like to welcome you to the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. How are you doing today? What can we do for you?
I'm fine. Yeah, you're saying you're proud to take international calls, and I'm sure you're right, because, I mean, whatever that happens in the U.S. affects the rest of the world, so there you go.
Well, the thing about international is the amazing amount of savings. Malaysia has seen a tremendous amount of growth this year, while the U.S. has been effectively stagnant. So it's just a very, very thrilling and exciting to me to have the opportunity to talk to people internationally. What's your question today?
Yeah. What I wanted to ask was, with regards to the Euro-Pacific Precious Metals Company that you guys are starting up, what I wanted to know was, will you deliver like physical gold and silver to buyers outside the United States, for example, like in Malaysia, or is this specifically a U.S. Delivery-based thing only?
You know, I'm not at liberty to discuss any further details. I want to defer to Peter on that. When he's ready to announce the details, I'd like him to take that lead.
Yeah, the issue is because the regulators are still in the final stages of getting that done. They're not even allowing us to give details about what it is, because there is a chance that something that we're proposing, a service, might be changed on their end. And so I know that with our Perth Mint Certificate Program, it is possible to get metal fabricated and shipped. So that is something that's available now. Now,
correct.
Whether they can be shipped to Malaysia or not, it's something that will be available probably on our website. But we have to check with Peter on the status of the EPC Metals Company, and then we'll be able to give you a better answer. And that, hopefully that won't be too long. We've been waiting, but in the... With the atmosphere right now, the regulators are very, you know, very much understaffed, I guess, because they're just looking at everything 10 times more than they used to. Whereas before, maybe they would list, give something a cursory examination. Now they'll look at it 10 times. So it's you've gone from one side of the pendulum to the other side. So it's something that shouldn't be too long. We will. We'll hopefully be able to make an announcement in the next several weeks on the show, or Peter will do it on his blog. And at that point, we should have a lot more better information for you.
All right. That's fine.
Thank you very much for your call. Matt in Virginia, you are not an international caller, I realize, but it is still a pleasure to have you. How are you doing today in Virginia?
Doing good. It's a little rainy here, but... we'll survive, no problem.
Very nice, very nice. What can we do for you today?
Well, basically, I just wanted to say that I think I've chosen a wise investment by having a Chinese girlfriend.
I'm gonna keep a million miles away
about,
from that one
about our relationship. But anyways, my question was what you might think a debate would look like, or rather, a discussion would look like between Nouriel Roubini and Peter Schiff. Nouriel Roubini likes to talk a lot about the carry trade, the growing asset bubble, and the possible snapback in the dollar. You know, he mentions that it won't be 2 or 3%, but it'll be more like, you know, 20 or 25%. And
right.
I'm kind of wondering if you guys can,
you know,
kind of discuss the carry trade a bit.
I follow Nouriel Roubini. I used to follow him a lot more. I've been following him less and less over the past maybe 6 months or a year or so. And the reason for that is that he seems to forget the big hole in the middle of the world, which is the U.S. budget and trade deficits. So he's talking about the dollar carry trade and the fact that, oh, it's going to come to an end and we'll have a snapback rally, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is that the dollar is such a fundamentally weak currency that the dollar carry trade is really just people getting out of the dollar and getting into overseas assets. You know, the Japanese yen, when that was used as a funding currency, it's still being used as a funding currency for carry trades. The Japanese yen is fundamentally a tremendously strong currency. Why? Because they run huge, huge trade surpluses with the rest of the world. And that's ultimately what pulls your currency up. You cannot help but your currency rise when you're running trade surpluses, because by definition, it means that you are building products, sending those products overseas, and taking back wealth into the country. Well, guess what? We're running a massive trade deficit. We're running a deficit this year of about 5% of GDP. We've been running 5% of GDP for the past several years, and with a couple of exceptions, we've run trade deficits every year since 1971. Nouriel Roubini, I used to really have a lot more respect for him about a year or two ago when he was really just talking about the issues inside the U.S. economy and the fact that we really had serious problems. Now, I have no evidence for this, but it wouldn't surprise me if maybe he's angling for some kind of political appointment. I don't know. But, you know, he's been talking about this dollar snapback rally. I saw the thing in, what was it, probably the Telegraph, or was it the Financial Times, where he called for a snapback rally. And I think a discussion between Peter and Nouriel would be very brief, because I think Peter would quickly point out the fallacies in Mr. Roubini's points, and then they would move on. So
actually, I wanted to add one. Roubini and Peter Schiff had dinner a couple of weeks ago, and I had talked to Peter very shortly after they had dinner. And the funny thing, what he said is, he says that the persona that you get, the person that you see on TV, is very different from the individual that he had dined with. And so he said they actually have a lot more in common than you would think. And so one thing that Nouriel says about the public face of Nouriel Roubini and what he says in private, it actually may have ring true. There may be some agenda there. Who knows? The deflation argument that he has, I mean, has some merit to it. But the problem that he doesn't see is you've got Helicopter Ben at the wheel here, and they're going to print money up. So in nominal terms, it's very difficult for prices to drop. And so that is the crux of the situation. There is no Paul Volcker on the horizon. There is no way to print your way out of this. And so, yeah, nominal prices may be fine. And maybe the average person will not understand it. But
Roubini also seems to forget that back in the Great Depression, we were on the gold standard. And, you know, Peter has made this point numerous times, and I think maybe people like Roubini either don't fully listen to and fully appreciate what Peter's saying, or I don't know what the reason is, but in real terms, Peter has spoken about this very clearly, that in real terms, in terms of gold, an inflationary boom is always followed by a deflationary bust. That's why he's calling for Dow in terms of gold to go down. In nominal terms, in U.S. dollar terms, in monopoly money terms, who knows what the Dow will do. If they throw enough money at it, the Dow might even go up. In fact, that's something that Peter has called for. But in real terms, in terms of gold, we are headed lower. So Roubini seems to regard the gold standard as an ancient relic. He called it in one of his RGE Monitor newsletters, which I read weekly. He called it, quote-unquote, an ancient relic. And I respectfully disagree with Professor Roubini on that point. In any event, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it. We're going to go now to Adam in New York. I love New York. I didn't leave my heart there, but how are you doing, Adam?
I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly, certainly. How are things going?
Good. I have a number of questions.
Please go ahead.
I'm simply wondering how one invests in gold. I know it might seem kind of, I don't know, amateur, but I've been trying to. That's one question. I have other questions, but that's my first.
There are multiple ways to do it. The Perth Mint certificate program that Hemant mentioned a few minutes ago is very, very popular amongst our clients. That's one way. in which case your gold is actually held at the Perth Mint in Australia, and you receive a certificate that indicates your ownership of the gold there. Another way is simply to go to a local coin dealer or coin shop and buy physical precious metals for your own possession. Another way is to buy the investments that are available over the exchanges, whether they are an ETF or whether they are the Central Fund of Canada, which is a favorite of our investors at Euro Pacific Capital. The Central Fund of Canada holds roughly 60% gold, about 40% silver, and is very, very popular. You also have websites like goldmoney.com, run by Jim Turk, that offer people the ability to effectively hold their savings in gold and allows them transactional access to it. I don't know much about their services, but there are a lot of different ways to own gold.
I see. And so the way you guys do it, I mean, I have to literally, I guess, call up a broker who deals with commodities and then make a deal or purchase gold that way. That's one way.
Correct. If you wanted to do that, we have brokers in the office right now. Our number to our firm is 800-727-7922.
No, I know the number,
yeah. Oh, okay.
Right.
727-7922. You can call straight away, and we've got brokers in the office now.
Gotcha. All right. I also had some other questions.
Go ahead, please.
I was wondering what, I guess, Peter's take or your take is on real estate. I have been trying to get my parents actually to invest in the city because my presumption is there'll be hyperinflation in the next couple of years. So I was just wondering what your guys' perception is of that.
You know, the U.S. real estate is not a good place to be right now. Peter has consistently talked about the fact, again, that anytime you have an inflationary boom, it is followed by a deflationary bust. So,
right, but then won't there be hyperinflation afterwards?
There will be hyperinflation afterwards. There will be hyperinflation afterwards, but right now we are still working off the excesses of the previous few years. The subprime crisis that we saw last year primarily hit the residential market. By all accounts, the commercial real estate market will be the next shoe to drop.
Right.
So if you're looking at investing in real estate inside the United States, probably not a great place to be for the same reasons that you wouldn't invest in productive U.S. assets right now, is because there's just not a lot of production and a lot of growth taking place inside the United States. So if you're looking for real estate investments, you would do well to invest in real estate investment trusts in foreign countries where we believe the rents are better supported by the fundamentals. The growth is taking place, stronger currencies, dividend yields, all the standard reasons that we would invest overseas. What's your final question?
Yeah, well, I guess it's kind of related to those things, but I guess more so the gold and silver. Is it just a placeholder, or can you profit off of it going up? I mean, eventually, I presume it'll come back down. These things, or
of gold?
Yeah,
gold is real cash. Gold is real money.
Right.
Prior to 1971, when we had when we were on the gold standard, all these little pieces of paper that people carry around in their pockets were really nothing more than a receipt for a fixed fraction of an ounce of gold. That's all it was. That's all it was intended to be. And then in 1971, our wonderful President Nixon decided to close the gold window. And now all these little pieces of paper on that day became monopoly money. And so, in nominal terms, the price of gold will go up. But in real purchasing power terms, in terms of what you can actually buy for 1 ounce of gold, it's relatively the same. If you go back into the 1920s, you could buy a fine men's suit for roughly the cost of an ounce of gold. And if you fast forward that 100 years later or so, for an ounce of gold, you can still get a fine men's suit. So, gold does not earn interest. It does not pay dividends. And you do not earn any rent from it.
Right.
It is cash. It is cash. It is, it is real money. It is fixed.
Right.
It is the currencies that are floating against gold. It is not gold that's floating. The supply of gold in the world grows at maybe 1-1.5% a year, depending on how fast they can mine it out of the earth. But that's about it. Gold is fixed. So anyway, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate your interest as always. I want to give the 800 number out for calling into the show again. The number, 888-678-9597. Again, my name is Neeraj Chaudhary. I'm an investment consultant with Euro Pacific Capital in the Los Angeles branch. And it is my honor and privilege today to sit in and substitute for Peter Schiff, who could not be here with us today. I'd like to go to another international caller. Again, a great pleasure to take another international caller. Dave in Toronto, how are things in the Great White North?
Yeah, they're pretty good. The weather's not
excellent
too bad these days.
Excellent, excellent.
Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly, certainly. What can we do for you today?
I have two questions.
Okay.
Make them quick. I guess my first question would be, I just wanted some clarification on what the benefits are of having a strong currency for a country, aside from the fact that they have purchasing power and they can import a lot of goods from other countries. What are the other benefits of it? Because all I'm hearing these days is that, you know, the Canadian dollar is getting stronger. It's not a good thing because we're going to lose manufacturing jobs and we're not going to manufacture as much. But there's got to be positive things about it, too. I mean,
well, think about what is a currency, okay? A currency is nothing more than a claim on the assets of a particular country. So, for example, if you've got a Canadian dollar and you've got, let's say, some gold in Canada or some coal or some oil, you guys are very rich in natural resources, then a Canadian dollar represents a claim on those resources. So then the question is, well, what drives that currency higher and what forces the currency lower? And the answer is, it is the production of wealth. It is the savings and production of wealth in a given country that indicates the strength or weakness of their currency. So in Canada, you're rich in natural resources. You have a government that's actually fairly responsible. You have in terms of fiscal deficits. Mm-hmm. You have a banking sector that's only levered, I think it was 18 to 1, maybe 19 to 1, compared to the rest of the world, which is much, much higher. So you've got a reasonably well-run banking sector. You don't have a housing bubble because you don't have this crazy subsidy to the real estate industry of writing off mortgage interest.
Mm-hmm.
You guys run a pretty good ship up there. So your currency reflects that. And the strength, the advantage of a strong currency is that as you look overseas for either investment or travel or importing of goods, Canadian dollar will buy more of those things. So if you want to buy a Toyota that's coming to you from Japan and you have a strong Canadian dollar, then in Canadian dollar terms, you're going to pay less for that Toyota than a U.S. resident will, because in U.S. dollar terms, our dollar is dropping against the yen. So the advantage of a strong currency is that, one, it reflects the savings and the wealth that are taking place, the wealth production that are taking place in a given country, and two, it allows you to buy more stuff. And that's ultimately, it is when an individual citizen works, saves his money, produces wealth, the currency is his opportunity to monetize his productivity. And so when you have a currency like the U.S. dollar that is being systematically debased, then every dollar that I, as U.S. resident, earns is steadily losing value, because you've got the Federal Reserve out there pumping out trillions of dollars, handing it over to their buddies at Goldman Sachs, and the productivity that the average American citizen is trying to put together is being taken away by the weak currency. So now, if the dollar has declined 10% against the Japanese yen, and I want to buy a Toyota Corolla, that Toyota Corolla is going to cost me 10% more than it cost me, say, last year, because the dollar has gotten that much weaker. It's actually more than 10%, but I think you get the concept.
Sure, yeah. Okay, thanks a lot. That was a great response.
Certainly.
It made a lot of sense.
You guys are doing great things up there. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's good. It feels good. But my other quick question was in regards to gold. I wanted to know what kind of a mix you would recommend? I mean, as much as you can over the radio, but like from like actual gold bullion to stocks to like large cap stocks and kind of smaller stocks. Like, I'm just wondering what the recipe is.
It wouldn't be appropriate for me to give you specific investment recommendations over the year because you and I have not spoken, and I don't have enough information from you in order to be able to make a suitable recommendation.
Okay.
But in general, you want to have some exposure to the three regions in the world that we think are going to do better than the U.S. dollar, which are the commodity regions of which you're a part, Asia, which is where all the manufacturing, the growth is taking place, and balancing that with some of the stronger economies in Europe, specifically Norway, Switzerland are countries that we favor. Also, the Eurozone, Germany and Finland are strong economies.
Mm-hmm.
And really, in terms of industries, we like the basic industries, utilities, pipelines, infrastructure, agriculture, natural resources. For people who want to speculate a little bit, they can put a small portion of their account into things like precious metals miners. So there's a wide variety. And then for people who need the income, we can offer international fixed income. So there are a wide variety of investments, and I would encourage you to call our 800 number and speak with one of our investment consultants, and we can certainly help you.
I'll do that.
The reason
that question came about is because I've noticed that a lot of the larger cap companies are they don't seem to be moving as high, like they seem to be lagging the price of gold. Like they're not as active as they should be, in my opinion. Anyway, is there any reason why you think that may be? I'm just talking some of the larger North American companies.
The miners. I'd be very, very careful when looking at precious metals miners. The reason is that they are very, very speculative in nature. If you are new to international investing, I would not focus on the precious metals miners as the first place where I would make a recommendation to you. They do not typically pay dividends, and they can also be quite volatile. I mean, they can move more quickly than the price of gold or silver, and if the price of gold or silver moves quickly, then these miners are going to move even more quickly, and they're going to be very, very volatile. So I would encourage you strongly to speak with an investment consultant, and I'm sure they can help you put together some recommendations. We're going to go to Charles in Washington. Welcome to the air. I've got you there. There we go.
Yeah. Hello.
Hello. How are you today?
Oh, hi. Good, good. I have two short questions for you.
Please go ahead.
Dr. Peter always mentioned about the Hui HUI index.
Yes.
And I was trying to buy, is it a stock I can buy, or is it something, can we buy Hui or not?
The HUI is the American Exchange Gold Bugs Index.
Yeah.
That's what you're referring to.
Right.
That is an index of gold mining shares. It is calculated based on the underlying components, which you can look up online. But in terms of being able to actually buy the index, it is really a virtual index. It is not a tradable index.
Is there anything that's tradable we can buy? I mean, like you mentioned, some gold company may not be safe, right? Because you don't know.
Right.
So small. So any a bunch of company they mix together and you can buy them?
Again, it would really not be appropriate for me to give you any specific investment recommendations on the air.
Okay.
What I would encourage you to do is call our brokerage side, 800-727-7922. Speak with one of our investment consultants. There are investment consultants available now that can speak with you, and
right.
I would strongly encourage you to speak with them, and I'm sure that they can help you with your investment needs.
Yeah,
what was your other question?
Yeah, the other question is, I also admire this Faber, right? I forgot his first name.
Mark Faber. Yes.
Yeah, he mentioned like a really bad outcome. They say maybe there's more depression coming, more, you know, disaster coming. And plus, he was advising people to buy a little farm and to, you know, to be independent and self-sufficient. Do you,
you know,
envision
I have a client,
such a bad outcome?
I have a client in the Bay Area who owns a ranch in the South. I don't want to give the exact state, but that is his plan B. I don't want to scare you. I don't want to put any undue fear out there. But I will tell you this, in terms of what is to come, this quote-unquote Great Recession that we've just been through over the past 24 months or so was really nothing more than the Warm-Up Act. It was just spring training. The real economic pain is yet to come. And all we've really done by pumping the economy up with a massive amount of fiscal stimulus and monetary stimulus is kick the can down the road, and it's going to make the pain much, much, much worse. So in terms of what is to come, we believe that you cannot print your way to prosperity. You cannot borrow your way to prosperity. And unfortunately, those are the two things that we've done in the last 12 months. So in terms of what is to come next, unfortunately, there is more pain to come, we believe. So hopefully, Charles, you will call one of our brokers and we can try to help you position yourself for what we believe is going to be a very serious and difficult period in the United States. John in Virginia, this is Neeraj Chaudhary, Wall Street Unspun, Peter Schiff's radio show. What can we do for you today?
Oh, hi. I was looking at stuff that George Soros owned, and he has a lot of great stuff. It looks like something that Peter would like. But there are also a lot of companies that are really exposed to America, like AT&T and Walmart and the big banks and stuff like that. And I was wondering why you think he would buy something like that. He's obviously not stupid, but what do you think he would...
I respect George Soros's views in general. He was the one, if you remember back in 1992, who forced the devaluation of the British pound because he identified it as a weak currency. And he said, you know, this is ridiculous, and effectively forced the pound lower. If you go out and Google Black Wednesday, or if you go to Wikipedia and type in Black Wednesday, you'll see some details around around that incident. As far as why he's buying AT&T and Walmart, to be perfectly honest with you, I can't say. I don't know what his specific recommendations are. I do know that in general, he shares our views, our concerns about the U.S. economy and the U.S. dollar. You know, it's possible that he views those as being defensive plays. But I would, if he was on the line right now, I'd probably chat with him about some of the opportunities internationally. You know, Walmart right now is paying about a 2% dividend yield. If you were to look internationally, the yields can be much, much higher. Again, I don't want to get into too many specifics because that's not really what we're permitted to do from a regulatory standpoint, but the dividends are much, much higher. So, you know, in terms of the dividends, in terms of the currencies, we believe that the currency the U.S. dollar is going to be relatively weak for an extended period, to borrow a line from the Federal Reserve. We think that the U.S. dollar is going to be weak, and the growth is taking place overseas. So why would he invest in the United States? I can't tell you, but it's not supported by any of the economic views that we share with him.
All right, thanks.
No problem. Thank you for joining us. We are now going to move to Steve in New Mexico, in the beautiful state of New Mexico.
Just fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm well, sir. I'm well, sir. What can we do for you today?
Well, just calling in relation to a story that seemed to surface this week regarding large counterfeit gold bars that seem to be made of tungsten.
Tungsten,
and wondering
yeah.
what your take might be on this in terms of is this maybe an indication that the electronically traded funds, the COMEX, even the U.S. government do not have the physical metal to back their promises?
Well, this is a great question. The gold at Fort Knox, that is in theory stored at Fort Knox, has apparently not been audited in about 50 years. I don't have the exact date, but I believe it's been about 50 years. As far as this tungsten metal, I did read the same story that that you may have read, or maybe a similar story that talked about how tungsten was the same density as gold, and could therefore be substituted, and you could sort of mix it with gold, and you can get it by most analysts. I don't know if it's necessarily an indication that the gold is not in Fort Knox or anywhere else. I would say that it is something to be aware of. I think that if you look at something like the Perth Mint has been in continuous operation for over 100 years and has been audited by an outside auditor and insured, I believe, by Lloyd's of London. So if you're with a responsible seller who has been in business for many years, who has an independent auditor, who has insurance, I cannot say specifically whether this tungsten story represents some sort of deeper problem, but I do think it's endemic of the fact that when you have gold moving up so sharply, that people are going to try whatever means they can to try and take advantage of that gold price. So that's what I think this is really about more than anything else.
All right. I really appreciate your time.
Not at all. Not at all. Let me share the number again for callers, 888-678-9597. My name is Neeraj Chaudhary. I'm an investment consultant with Euro Pacific Capital in the Los Angeles branch. I'm here with Hemanth Kathuria, the branch manager here in Los Angeles and a close friend of Peter's for many years. We are substituting live for Peter. He was unable to join us today, and he asked us to help him with today's show and gave us this wonderful opportunity to talk to people from around the world. As I've mentioned before many times, it is a great joy and pleasure to have this opportunity because the world is an incredible place right now for growth, the rest of the world. It's unfortunate that we're stuck in this cycle of spending and borrowing and printing in the United States, but that is not taking place overseas. Overseas, for the most part, although they're running deficits, there's also a tremendous amount of savings taking place in Asia, a tremendous amount of production. I have a couple of clients who just came back from China, and one of my colleagues in the Los Angeles office just came back from a 10-day trip to Hong Kong and Guangdong, and reports that those cities and those economies are simply teeming. They are growing leaps and bounds, and they are leaving us in the dust. And it's unfortunate for U.S. citizens, but it is terrific for international investors and for the citizens of those countries who are finally getting to experience the production, the wealth that comes with the production that they've been sending to the United States for many years, and for which we've been paying them with fiat monopoly money. Joe in New York, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. I was just wondering if you could explain something.
Sure.
I saw an article, I think it was on the Euro-Pacific site. It was a link to an article. It said Barrick Gold shuts the hedge book as world gold supply runs out. And I was wondering if you could tell me what a hedge book is.
You know, a hedge book for a producer is simply their way of selling their production that they have not produced yet, but they expect to produce in the future. So let's say Barrick Gold expects to produce several million ounces of gold in a given year or a given period. They, in order to smooth out their revenues, they may engage in the futures market and say, okay, we're going to sell X number of ounces of gold in the futures market for delivery in December, we're going to get the premium and the cash today. This allows them to manage their revenues and allows them to budget much better. Now, the upside of a hedge book is that it allows consistency of revenues if you manage your hedge book correctly. The disadvantage of hedging is that if prices move higher and you've committed in a contract to sell your gold at a fixed price, then you do not realize that appreciation. So if at the start of this year, Barrick Gold entered into a December contract to sell a fixed amount of production at $1,000 an ounce, which in January might have seemed like a good deal because gold was in the mid to high 800s, then guess what? Come December, they have to deliver their metal, and they will only get $1,000 an ounce. And if in December the gold price stays where it is now, even if it doesn't go up anymore, then they've lost out on $140 or whatever the number is worth of cash, because they only they've entered into a contract. This is the hedge book. They've entered into a contract to sell their production at $1,000 an ounce. So when gold prices are rising, and in fact this applies to any commodity, but gold in particular, when gold prices are rising, it is not surprising that we would see producers close up their hedge books, because hedging is a strategy when prices that you are stable that you want to engage in to smooth out your revenues.
Okay, that helps out a lot.
All right,
thank you
for the call. Thank you for the call. It's all these things that that we hear about in the media, I think, are often not well explained. And there's also a tremendous amount of speculation that takes place in the futures market. But people forget that the original point of the futures market was to give farmers the ability to sell their crops and their livestock and receive cash payment now to help them with their production. The whole purpose of the futures market was to help farmers with crops and with livestock and help them manage their revenues. It's only been in the last couple of decades that speculation has taken over and become an enormous, enormous business and an enormous problem, in my view, for the U.S. economy, because nobody's producing anything anymore. We're just sitting around speculating on pork bellies, and we're speculating on cocoa and sugar and coffee and orange juice and all the rest of it. No one's actually producing anything anymore. And it's very, very frustrating when you hear people talk about, oh, I want to play the futures market. Well, that's not really the way we want to see things. We want to see people producing. We would love to see that take place in the United States. We don't want to see all this taxation. It's not happening right now. But what has been substituted in the U.S. economy for the last 15 years has been speculation. It's the same thing in the stock market. People forget that even going back to the Great Depression, you had the dividend yield on the S&P 500 never had gone below 3%. Since 1994, it has never been above 3%. Why? Because since 1994, we've been engaging in share price speculation. We've been speculating that the share prices are going to go higher, and so we don't need the dividends. Well, unfortunately, that speculative period is going to have to come to an end. We're going to have to get back to production. And if you look at things like the futures market, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm being a little naive and a little idealistic, but I'd love to see the futures market go back to what it was supposed to be, which is a tool to help farmers and ranchers with their crops and livestock. Paul in Toronto, another international caller. I'm always thrilled. How are you doing today? How are things in the great state, in the great country of Canada?
Yeah, things are still going pretty good up here.
Terrific, terrific. What can we do for you tonight?
Want to know when you guys are opening up an office up here in Toronto.
Oh, boy. I get many, many, many questions on that. We would love nothing more than to expand. I know that Peter, this is something that is near and dear to Peter's heart, and I also know that we have a tremendous amount of interest in Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal to open an office there. I think my hunch is it would probably be in Toronto. As far as the dates, we are being, as Hemanth mentioned at the start of the show, we are being very, very sensitive to the regulatory agencies right now, the regulators right now.
Okay.
I think that Hemanth's point is right. I think that in many cases, the regulators have kind of been shown up a little bit with all the blow-ups. You had the Madoff blow-up, the Stanford blow-up, and a few others. And so I think they're taking their time, and I think ultimately, I don't know if it will be good for the country, or I don't know if it'll be bad, but having the regulators scrutinize businesses to the extent that it helps people avoid fraud, as with the Bernie Madoff situation, I think is good. I do think that they can they have feelings just like everyone else, and so I think that as they got hit by a couple of those schemes, they've come back and they've decided to be even more careful about their future scrutiny. But this is definitely for Peter. I know that. I've spoken with him about it, and as soon as we can do it, we would love to do it.
I think once you do open up an office up in Toronto, you guys might be a little bit more predisposed to buying your gold from the Royal Mint and not from the Perth Mint in Australia. And American citizens can just drive over the border here and get it whenever they want, come
right,
and touch and feel it. In Canada, unlike the States, Canada, we never confiscated our citizens' gold, and we never will.
Right.
So, I mean, you guys can literally jump in a car and drive over here and grab your gold. You know, couldn't bring it back with you, but, you know, you leave with me.
All right, everybody, let's meet at Paul's house.
Beautiful. So
terrific.
And I just want to tell you what's going on in Canada.
Sure.
Our prime minister is over in India right now, and
okay,
then he's going
great.
To be off to China. So the thought here is, you know, Canada just gotten fat and lazy over the years, just doing all our trade with the United States, because you guys are right across the imaginary border. We can make
right.
our stuff or dig our stuff out of the ground or cut our trees down and just truck it right across to you. But now you guys are buying less and less stuff, and if your currency continues to depreciate versus ours, which it is doing right now,
yep.
our stuff is going to be more expensive, and we're going to be losing more jobs. So right now our prime minister is smart. He's going over there trying to cut new trade deals all over the world, because we're realizing we can't rely on you guys anymore. You know, we got to take all our eggs out of one basket and spread it out.
Right. You know, unfortunately for U.S. citizens, but I think fortunately for the rest of the world, global trade is slowly but surely moving away from the United States. There was a time when the United States economy represented 30% of total world economic output. We're now below 20% and headed lower. Every major currency has outperformed the U.S. dollar this year. That includes the Brazilian real, which I believe is the top performing currency. I think it's up something like 30% this year against the U.S. dollar. China has now become the number one export destination for most of Asia and Brazil. The Australians, I know, have a very close relationship with the Chinese. So as we started out today's show, and I want to thank you, Paul, for joining us. As we started out discussing on today's show, the world is becoming more and more independent of the United States. The decoupling that Peter spoke of, and he's been speaking of for many, many years, is continuing to take place right before our very eyes. It is unfortunate for U.S. Citizens. It is fortunate for investors who choose to take advantage of that, as our investors do. Overall, it's good for international citizens who, after 40 years of supporting the United States with trade deficits that were paid for with funny money, they're now getting to experience the fruit of their labor. They're getting to experience the benefit of their production. So a very, very exciting time for the rest of the world and for U.S.-based investors and international investors who choose to take advantage of that growth.
Well, great job, Nerj, on the show. Thanks for everybody for joining us this week as we stepped in for Peter. He will be back with you next weekend. And once again, Wall Street Unspun, please join us 5 p.m. Pacific next week for another show. Thanks for listening in.
Thank you, folks. Have a great evening.